here to run a police department, not a frat house.
Unfortunately, she's been diagnosed with a brain tumor.
That's not a U.S. president. Okay. That's just the prime minister of Russia defending the president of Russia.
What do you want me to lock everybody up? What is that going to solve?
I am a very ethical person.
I have many Filipino friends. Our children grew up.
Right. I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Now, if you shoot a little from the bridge, you've got a problem.
Mr. Congressman, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining.
Thank you. I wouldn't dignify you by peeing on your leg. I don't. It wouldn't be worth wasting the urine. But...
Broadcasting from the city of homes and beaches, Steve Tavares is angry.
Welcome back to the podcast. Steve Tavares here. Man, the other day I had such a great dinner. It was so great. And first of all, I want to say this is not an paid advertisement. Not at all. But I went to this great place. It's my favorite restaurant in Alameda. It's called Traboco. It's over in South Shore Center. It's Italian. I think it's the best Italian food like in the East Bay. And definitely the best restaurant in Alameda. And I go there all the time. Always order the same thing. And I show up the other night. It was a weird dinner. Weird thing happened to me. Changed my view of the whole place. Not the food, though. So, you know, it's just like every other time. I like to sit in the chef's table. So you can kind of, you know, it's kind of nice. You can watch. I'm a good cook, you know, so I like to watch the guys cooking and, you know, the camaraderie. And I'm watching, and you know, and then the waiter comes up and he's like, "Eh, signore," just like always, you know, like, "Oh, would you like a
water? Would you like a flat water? You like a sparkling water?"
And they're like, "Oh yeah," you know, and then he's like,
Here's a special. So we got the big pork kit. It's very big. It's very good. And we got the branzino. It's a big fish. Very good. Very good.
You know, he's like putting his fingers together, like, you know, thumb to forefinger, like,
hey, it's a good.
You know, like Italian, right? So then I get the same thing every time. I'm just going to have the fettuccine bolognese. Say, oh, you can't go wrong. You know what? I'm going to tell you. This is not an impression of town, like stereotypical. This is how he was talking.
You can't go wrong with the fettuccine bolognese.
You know? So I'm like, we're kind of like, hey, what's going on? So we can, you know, keep talking, eat some, you know, have some beer, wine, you know, appetizer. And then I'm like, the same guy.
He's like, is everything good with you, baby?
And we're like, oh, yeah, it's good. It's great. Thank you. Thank you. Immediately goes to the cooks who are kind of Latino, and he's like, amigo. I'm like, wait a minute. You know, that dude, I was thinking this dude must be Sicilian because he was a little bit darker skin. And I was like, holy smokes, this is a put on. These guys are doing fake Italian accents. That guy turned out he was Peruvian because I was going to, you know, I'm a reporter, man. I'm going to investigate. Later, I found out he's Peruvian. That's as far as that's pretty far from Italy. Right? And he's like, and I'm thinking like the owner, Giuseppe, great guy. Is this dude really Italian? Because he does it. It's like they're doing an impression of the owner. You know, he's like,
signore, you like, you wanted to enjoy your food.
And they're like doing that voice. And I'm looking at Giuseppe and I'm like, I don't think this dude's Italian either. What is going on here? I think this dude's like a Serbian freedom fighter or something. He's kind of looking vague. Now I'm thinking he's Serbian. He's not even Italian. The food seems authentic. So I'm like, there's something going on here. It's like maybe after the 20th time you order fettuccine bolognese, they pop out and they go,
surprise, you want an Italian Italian reality show, hey, chinko chinko chinko, say you win one of those,
right? No doubt. Here to figure this all out for me is my number one paisan. He is a former California state director for the 2016 Ted Cruz for President campaign, and a Bay Area Republican consultant, Jason Scalise. Welcome to the show, man.
I was trying to figure out if you were doing like a Saturday Night Live skit or something like that. I have these flashbacks to Janet Jackson when they're soaking cork. I don't know if you recall that episode.
That one. Yeah.
As we like to say, cork soakers are born, not made.
But yeah, no, actually you do pretty good impressions. You're good at this radio stuff.
This is exactly the way the guy was. So they obviously either they're telling, the owner is telling them, you got to talk, you got to make it authentic. But I'm just waiting for a black guy to start going like, hey, what's the good old?
Look, I got to.
Then I'm going to be like, this is it. I'm calling them out.
I know this is not the point of the story, but it forces me to bring up the fact that I was a busboy in an Italian restaurant in Plymouth, Massachusetts at 13 years old.
Mass.
I used to go to work every night with my bright, cleanly washed polo shirt. And that shirt was red by the time I came home from all the pasta sauce I spilt on myself. But the thing that I'll always remember about it was the downstairs basement where the owner's grandmother and aunt used to sit there rolling all the pasta.
Yeah,
and they did it for hours on end.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Well, this place has a little window when you go to the restroom.
I love that.
And they got the guy who's... I swear he's probably from Guadalajara, but he's
sounds
probably
like
going to be
provide
like...
provide good entertainment, too.
I mean, they make the pasta. Oh, it's... I'm not kidding you, man. It's the greatest place. But they're also good at accents, apparently. And you're not ready for the job.
The next thing you know, they're going to be imitating the Boston accent, because I don't know if you saw, but Boston is now rated the number two accent in the country as far as what people find the sexiest.
Sexy.
I'm not kidding.
Well, I'm going to start throwing in some...
Texas was number one. Boston was number two.
I'm going to start throwing in some wickeds in there. It's wicked. This is let's
have a wicked good conversation here today.
Ooh. Yeah. I was going to say pack the cab, but that's so...
Actually, it's really funny because one of the guys we're going to talk about today, the other day he wore a pair of khakis. And I found myself thinking, you know, back in Boston, that could either be a pair of pants or what you start your car with.
Oh, you know, my uncle lives in Somerville.
Oh,
right next to Cambridge.
They're badass there.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah, they had some kind of... There was something went on over there. It was a Portuguese mayor, and they tried to take him out, recall him. And then
I thought you meant whacking.
No. Okay. No, there was... I was like... I had to tell my, like, you know, Portuguese family and Portuguese people, like, this is so Portuguese. They tried to recall the guy, and then a bunch of people... Then he ran for recall again, and a bunch of people ran... He ended up winning the recall, so he got back.
Oh, did this have something to do with a pride parade or something like that?
I don't know, but I was like, that's so Portuguese.
Let's make sure we talk about that next time. I think that might have been what it was.
But well, we're here to talk about uniting America, right? Like, you are Mr. Republican. I'm Mr. Progressive. You're Mr. Conservative.
Is that what you call yourself? Is that what you guys call yourselves nowadays?
That's what the lady calls me, when she wants to, you know. Try to make the moves. Call him Mr.
It evolves.
Mr. Progressive.
That's right. I probably have been called worse.
She's like, you only move to the left. Can you move to the right sometimes? I'm going to try. I'm going to talk to my buddy Jason. He's going to bring me to the right.
We can find some common ground.
No, we get along, man. So I was thinking this actually should be like a pre-Thanksgiving or Easter, some kind of like thing where you have to be with your family. Primer. But how... How do we get along? We get along just fine, right? I tell people, like, this is always my trick, right? I go up to, if I think they're really hardcore Republican, I immediately try to weave in the idea, two ideas. Obama, mediocre, overrated. Hillary, can she just leave? And they're like, huh? Does not compute. They all do the same thing. It's like, there's like smoke coming out. The computers.
I'm surprised they let you live after saying things like that.
No, I'd say it's the Republicans.
Oh. Okay.
And the Republicans are like, wait a minute. I pegged this guy to be this way. He just said this about. And maybe, wink, wink, maybe I do believe those things. Obama's overrated. And Hillary, can you just leave us alone? Go away. But it just seems to be we're even. The guards are down. And we just talk normally. I will say that a lot of Republicans, they won't say negative back about their side. So then I'm going to say, it's not fair, man, because you can't agree everything on your side. But that's a little bit different, because I think Trump, a lot of people really don't like that he, and even if they like him, they know that he lies. That's like, this guy lies too much, and they don't like that. So that's kind of, you can kind of weasel it. But what's the trick, man? We get along. We have beers. Is it beer?
You know, man, I seem to think that a big part of why this happened was because we had a mutual respect for a very down-to-earth, very honest candidate that I, you know, that I once worked for in a partisan capacity, and now he's become like a brother to me. And that's how we met. You know, was it the 2014 CRP convention you were reporting in Burlingame?
Yeah.
And, you know, Peter Kuo, who was running for state senate, district 10 at that time. I think a lot of people that meet him after spending 5-10 minutes with him,
yeah,
he's a nice guy. Think either one of two things. Either this is the nicest guy in any room, or what am I missing? You know, what is it that I'm not seeing?
Yeah.
At what point am I going to, if I get too close to him, is he going to pull the wool over my eyes? Is he going to stab me in the back? Whatever. I tell you, as somebody who's known him for, you know, almost more than a decade, the guy has never let me down on a personal level, on a business level, on a political level. And he just, I mean, he is who he says he is. He's the real McCoy. And I think where we have the ability to unite is identifying people who truly believe what they say they believe. They're not doing it purely for political expediency. We've talked about some people in the past that on your side that I like. You know, a Tulsi Gabbard, for example. You know, I find her to be somebody who, you know, obviously is far to the left of where I am. That said,
yeah,
it doesn't seem to me that her her entire campaign strategy is based on trying to divide people any further than they're already divided. And right. I think that's where the bulk of the Democratic field is right now. Yeah. I think Bernie Sanders, the first time that he ran, right up until maybe last year, maybe 6 months ago, was the same way. Look, the guy was a dyed-in-the-wool Democratic socialist. He was who he said he was. But, you know, the mantra this year now is, who can say the most hateful things about Trump and anybody that would ever support him?
Yeah.
I mean, let me tell you something. As a conservative probably since 18, 19 years old, you know, I've been called the typical names, you know, the redneck, you know, maybe after 2010 we were called wing nuts. If anybody's really all that offended by that, well, Bible Thumper is another popular one.
Yeah,
if anybody's
yeah.
really all that offended by that, just, you know, get a life. Okay, this is really not that bad. Because I guarantee I've said some crazy things about some left-wingers as well.
Yeah.
However, we now live in an environment where the bulk of the Democratic candidates for president are calling people like me white supremacists, Nazis. I mean, there is no... Don't you remember a time in which you, like, couldn't talk about Nazism in reference to anybody in American politics? Because how do you equate a supporter of the President of the United States with somebody who murdered 6 million people?
Yeah.
That's how far we've gone. If this is not a soft civil war, I don't know what the hell one looks like.
Yeah, I do agree. I do wonder sometimes, like, what if we go like 20 years in the future and then we see, like, here is the seeds of it. But as a consultant, like, if you're these, like you're saying, these presidential candidates on Democratic side, not all of them yet have thrown like daggers, like the angry stuff.
Like eventually, they'll be there. Pretty solid. I think Gabbard.
Yeah,
is
I don't
solid.
Think she's
not going to go anywhere. But
as a consultant, that's pretty. That's weak sauce. That's low hanging fruit. If you're going to tell your candidate, go and, you know, call Trump this or that.
Well, you
right?
know, in the,
that's kind of like.
So, you know, going back to the Republican...
That's a sign of not a good candidate.
Going back to the Republican primary in 2016, right? In any Republican primary, at least at the national level. But now we've got Prop 14 in California. You really can't go as far to the right as you want. Because you're going to get held accountable if you make it to the general. But at the national level during the primary, especially during 2016... in fact, I'll go back further. 2012, when... Mike Huckabee surprised everybody. Or was that 2008? I'm sorry, 2008, when Huckabee surprised everybody. Yeah, everyone thought that Romney was going to be the far-right candidate.
I like Romney. If I was a Republican.
Of course you do, because he says a few bad things about Trump every now and then.
No, when he ran for president. I had a guy...
But as a... Let me tell you something.
Republican Steve, and he was me, but in a bizarro world,
I always a tweet about it. Like, so when did you run that 2012? A tweet about it, Bizarro Steve, Republican Steve. He liked Mitt Romney.
Yeah, but you know, I've never seen. And I personally like Mitt Romney, and his wife is kind of a hero of mine. She, I don't know if you know, she's got multiple sclerosis. My father has it. So you know, all that said and done, I think he's a good man. I think he's a decent man. But that guy could not stay in one position for more than a day during that 2008 race. And I think part of what happened was Mike Huckabee surprised everybody. He came in. He was the bona fide social conservative. And that's what a Republican primary is for president. It is who can capture the Christian right, who can capture the right to life voters. I think the issue has changed a lot in the last 10 years. But, you know, at the time, you know, who could capture those who were brutally against same-sex marriage. That has evolved a little bit, I think, within our party. Even 2012 was definitely a race to the right. But, you know, 2016 was so different because we had a lot of hardcore conservative candidates, far more conservative than Donald Trump is on his best day, consider a good day to be a conservative day. You know, between Cruz, between Rubio, between Rand Paul, you know, who's downright libertarian on a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, Trump was just a big disturber. You know, we're from Silicon Valley, right? To use a word from the Valley, Trump disturbed things. He disturbed the status quo.
Disruptor.
He's a disruptor. So, yeah. You know, the reality of it is, I think what's happening now, there's only one primary that anybody cares about. Even if two or three Republicans get in, nobody's going to care.
Yeah.
What's happening right now is it's no longer about who can go the furthest to the left, even though they're clearly trying to do it. And I tell you what, the most powerful person in the 2020 Democratic primary is not going to be Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden. It's going to be AOC. She's controlling the message of your party right now.
And you love that. As a consultant.
I don't hate her. I actually think Republicans can learn a lot from her.
Yeah.
But I think it's because she's got no fear.
Yeah.
She's not afraid to shake things up. And by the way, there wouldn't be an AOC if there wasn't a Donald Trump.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably true.
But right now, it's not a matter of who can go the furthest to the left from a political perspective. It is who can go the furthest to the left in bashing Trump and his supporters.
So in terms of getting along, part of it is people on both sides need to not be so strict in everything they say. You got to negotiate, kind of, right? You wouldn't be. Everything I believe is this non-negotiable with your wife or your husband or your boyfriend, your girlfriend. You would not be together very long.
Right.
You got to take. So I don't believe in moderates. There's no such thing as a moderate to me. That's somebody who is shady, who doesn't believe anything. But you can look like that. What we think as moderate is every so often you can pick, you believe what you want, believe, but every so often you pick stuff, you know, that you can deal with, right? So I think that's how we should talk. So if you're going to be like you said, Trump, you like Trump, therefore you must be white supremacist.
I mean, right?
Where do you go from there? You throw the gravy bowl and you leave and you go have McDonald's for Thanksgiving.
So let me ask you, is that the fault of the candidates? Is that the fault of the leaders?
No.
Or does Trump perhaps have
it's hypocrisy
some merit to when he says things along the lines that the media is really controlling what goes on in this country?
I can only talk to the left. It's hypocrisy. And we're in there may be people in this coffee shop who are like that. Definitely, we're next to Oakland. There's a bunch of people over there in Berkeley who are going to be they want peace and everybody to get along, but they're hypocrites. They act just like the far right.
I'm amused by this recent talking point of the left, and that is that we're involved in a constitutional crisis because of Trump, because of the AG's office. And I'm sorry, but I would argue that the Constitution is showing its value right now better than ever before.
Right.
And that's because Trump wants to go one way, the House wants to go another way, the media wants to go another way. And guess what? We're still sitting here having coffee.
Yeah.
In a town in which 95% of the people probably think I'm a complete fruitcake, you know?
I asked somebody. You don't look like Republican or Democrat. They said, that guy? What?
I don't know. I'm wearing a Ralph Lauren button-down shirt. And I probably looked the part.
Now you need a monocle and a top hat. They'll be like, that guy.
I got jeans and Skechers. I own two pairs of Birkenstocks. You know, I feel pretty good about
it. He's a monopoly guy. I wanted to get your perspective on our guy over here in the East Bay, Eric Swalwell, for president.
Okay.
What's your, as a Republican, your Republican friends, what do you guys say when you see this guy who was once a, you're very thankful because this guy took out super progressive Pete Stark, right? He's a hero. You got that guy. He's gone. Go retire, Pete. And
by the way, a perfect example of why Democrats are no more in favor of Prop 14 than Republicans are.
What's your perspective on that? On that run?
Well, you asked when I look at him. I mean, fortunately for me, we don't have to look at him all that often. Is there a poll that he's registered in yet? Or, you know, I'm reminded of.
Apparently, nobody watches MSNBC because
is it still on? No. You know, and we one of these days we need to do 20 minutes on MSNBC versus CNN versus Fox. You'll be surprised to hear things I have to say. But let me say this. You know, I find myself thinking of one of the great episodes, you know, one of the great TV shows of all time, The West Wing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people that will look at me as a political consultant and say, Jason, real life consulting is not The West Wing. And I say bullcrap because it is procedurally and process very accurate. The people that wrote that show, you mentioned MSNBC, Lawrence O'Donnell was one of the writers of the show.
Uh-huh.
D.D. Myers was one of the writers. On the right side, Frank Luntz was one of the writers. It is a wonky political show, especially when it comes to process. One of the things early on in the presidential election to follow Jeb Bartlett is Matt Santos' campaign manager sitting down with the pollster and the pollster makes a comment saying you're within the margin of error. And Josh, the campaign manager, says, within the margin of error of who? And the pollster says, within the margin of error of actually showing up in the poll. Well, that's where Eric Swalwell is right now. Look, I don't think there's anybody who better personifies my beef with the current field than Swalwell because he's got two things to run on right now. He's got the how much crap can I say about Trump and his supporters? Because he's in a safe district.
Yeah.
He's never going to be held accountable for it.
Agent of Russia.
He's,
the comments like that.
What are the worst things that I can say about Trump supporters so I can get on TV?
Right.
How many lies can I tell about what's actually going on, what actually went on with the Mueller investigation, what's actually going on with the subpoenas in his committee? And then the third thing is, he wants to take away everybody's gun. It is what it is. So on policy, he's about as far to the left as you've ever been on the Second Amendment. Okay? And he's just trying to capture a very, very small audience that's out there because, quite frankly, most of the people on the left don't feel that every gun should be taken away. How many Democrats are there in parts of this country where guns are a part of their day-to-day life? I mean, it is what it is. There's only the reality of it is, our media may be driven by what goes on the left and the East Coast, but there's still a huge portion of this country that believes in that right. So look, the bottom line with Swalwell, I have no freaking clue why it is that he decided to do this. He's in a safe seat. He could have been in that seat forever. Maybe he's just trying to turn it into a Senate seat somewhere down the road. Maybe he's not thrilled with the fact that Loretta Sanchez or Kevin DeLeon appear to be the obvious choices to replace Dianne Feinstein when she finally retires. But I just don't see anything. I don't see any real substance in this guy. And, you know, he might very well have had sort of a young Joe Biden appeal. He could have come across as a fairly moderate blue-collar type candidate. And he's blown it.
Well, when the gun... So what does it tell you about the gun part? When he's... So what he said, I think last year, he had an op-ed where he said, you want to have a, for assault weapons, you have a buyback program. So it was taken to be, you're going to take my guns. And, you know, Democrats do this too. It's for Republicans. They want to do something. It's not just that they want to do this, but they extrapolate everything in the world that could end up to be where everybody's going to be in slavery. Right? They're like, whoa, we just went, we're just going to like, just, it's just about no plastic straws. All of a sudden, we're all going to be thrown in jail. You know, extrapolate. So the left does that too.
I won't eat at a restaurant that has them right now.
But the left does that too, right?
Yeah.
So
both sides do it.
Yeah, they both go extrapolate. Whoa, this one thing will lead to this, so let's not do this little thing. But most people go and look at him. Swalwell was on Vice, and they were at some kind of local Iowa newspaper, and the guy says to him, "Are you sure it's a good idea? You know, they're going to think you're taking their guns away." And everybody seems to have, like, political people seem to have that reaction. He must know that reaction. Is that a sign that this is not a real campaign? He's just trying to get some sort of rise. He's up for something, because it actually doesn't make any sense to rile up half the country. Just so the idea, like, you had to know that they're going to go from buyback to you're going to take all my guns. And I don't even think progressives would like that.
Well, and I mean,
in general, not the gun part, but the idea
of we could talk for months about the abortion issue, but we're seeing it on the abortion issue right now too. You have states that are passing laws that are making it virtually impossible to have one. And I'm a staunch defender of the right to life, so yes, I'm more supportive of those states than not. But by contrast, you also have the other side of things, where you have, you know, the right to essentially terminate a life if a baby is born after a botched abortion. We have gone to the extremes on that issue, whereas for the first 25, 30 years after Roe v. Wade, we were actually fairly moderate on the issue. Most Republicans were either pro-life or they believed in the three key exceptions. And there were a ton of Democrats that even if they were not pro-life, they believed in those three exceptions too. Okay? The gun issue is no different. The gun issue has become all or nothing.
Yeah.
And all the candidates are reaching out for such a small percent of the population with something like, you know, a total, you know, and you talk about the gun buyback. People want to talk about Australia. Look, the reality of it is, the gun buybacks are only going to work for people that really, really need that money. How many people own those guns are going to suddenly say, "Well, I spent $1,000 on this particular rifle. I'm going to go ahead and sell it back for $100 because I've suddenly had a change in heart when it comes to the Second Amendment." Are there any bridges for sale in this town? It's just not.
Well, we actually at Alameda we have a lot.
All right, bad example. I don't know my surrounding environment too well.
We got four.
Look, I think he's a horrible candidate. He brings nothing to a ticket. He doesn't bring anything to the vice president.
Nobody wants a Californian on as a vice president. You don't need that for Democrats.
Trump may not even be on the ballot, which, by the way, I don't think is going to happen.
Yeah. So it kills me around here. People that know stuff, insiders, they keep parroting all this crap at me. I'm like, Why are you telling me he wants to be vice president? Who in the right mind would pick somebody from California? The idea is that you want somewhere where you could get electoral votes. You're never going to not
get
California, right?
The only reason why you pick a Californian,
crazy,
if you're the Democrat right now. So, like, let's say Bernie or Biden is the presidential pick, which right now is a reasonably safe bet. I would go to Vegas with that. Okay. Let's say one of those two is the presidential pick. The only people that can possibly help them are people that have outside of California credibility, which means you're going to get into identity politics.
Yeah. I mean, it's
minority,
the idea,
woman, gay.
The idea, though, also that he is in this for something better, right? How is this going to be if he either goes to Iowa caucus and gets 1%, 0.5%, or he drops out later this year, never registering even in the polls? How does he look better for any other job in politics, as an elected official? How does he look good?
Well, he is an attorney by trade, right?
He looks like a fool.
He is an attorney. You know, maybe practically speaking, and I think he's way too vain to be thinking about it this way, but maybe practically speaking, he thought that if he makes himself one of the three dozen that decide to run for office, for presidential office, maybe he's on the short list for something at the DOJ.
Yeah.
I mean, look, how many positions in every department in Washington are filled with attorneys and former prosecutors? So you don't even have to go to the DOJ. He could be at state. He could be at the Department of Defense.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really matter. The reality of it is bureaucracy is its own space. It's its own industry.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what he could be thinking about.
I don't know the guy personally, other than to say he just comes across as entirely too vain to be thinking about job security right now.
Yeah.
I think it's got to be for a Senate race. It's got to be for a gubernatorial race. And by the way, I don't put him in the top five for any of those seats.
No, I think he's going to go through it. I think he's going to continue running. And I think he's going to cash in, because from what I know, this guy, if you ask me what he believes in. I've covered him since 2011, before he was in Congress. Ask the question. What does Eric Swalwell believe in?
Stephen Tavares, what does Eric Swalwell believe?
I don't know.
Exactly.
I feel like I haven't done any homework. I feel like I'm dumb. Like, have I been around? He doesn't believe anything. So I think it's plausible to believe that he doesn't like being a congressman. He doesn't. He's not there. Like, he's not going to say, "I don't get anything done." It's not in his.
He's as far
bones.
Down the totem pole as you can be as a California Democratic congressman, right? You got the top of the totem pole is Speaker. You have some other heavy hitters, whether I like them or not, which I certainly don't, like Maxine Waters and Adam Schiff, who get a lot of attention. You have the freshman class like Katie Hill, Porter, who are turning a lot of heads right now. I mean, Swallow's low man. He's not even anything within his own delegation. And by the way,
The busboy at the presidential campaign.
And he also does not represent a district that's full of a lot of money.
That's true.
So he's not exactly going to have, he's not going to have Bernie and Biden and whatnot coming into his district
to raise money. And if not just money, it's not an engaged electorate in that whole thing.
I've worked in that district before. Turnout was horrid.
Yeah.
Horrid. It's one of the worst districts.
There's not much energy.
It is a hard-working blue-collar district.
Yeah,
it's the kind of district that, my parents grew up in the suburbs of Boston. But you know what? They voted back then.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk about one last thing about Peter Kuo. So the race you talked about, that was in 2014. That was the 10th Senate district, which is that's big. It's
I usually kind of refer to it as
San Jose.
Lower Alameda County, South Bay,
right.
Included Santa Clara, parts of San Jose. But then it was basically Milpitas up to, Castro Valley, you said.
So
yeah,
it's very, very big and different state Senate district. So that's where Bob Wieckowski is right now, state senator. So that was the race. That was the race with Mary Hayashi, the former assembly member who got caught stealing at Neiman Marcus.
Yep.
So she tried to make her comeback.
Yep.
And so it looked like Wieckowski.
She was actually very, very nice to us in that race.
Yeah. She was nice to me. One time she was a little bit too nice. And she started talking about, what do you like to do for fun? And I was like, whoa, mama.
Yikes.
I need to change the subject. I was like, what about that Wieckowski? That guy's a fool, huh? I had to change the subject because it was going to, I was like, where's this going? Come on now. Very attractive woman, but come on. I'm a taken man. I'm pure as the dripping snow. But so he had those two. Those are the big hitters.
I don't know
hitters.
If I've ever had a candidate hit on me before, Stephen. I kind of admire you.
What do you do for fun? While eating one of those mochi? Those like Japanese dessert kind of thing? I was like, oh boy. Anyway. So those were the two heavy hitters. Bob Wieckowski attacked Mary Hayashi and mugshot Mary and all this, and it was nasty. And Peter Kuo, you were running his campaign. You guys just jumped into that second spot and made it to November. It was pretty good. So Peter Kuo is now
the vice chairman of the California Republican Party.
So he's making inroads.
It's a major position.
Yeah, making inroads. He's Taiwanese,
yep.
American. That issue for him in 14 was
SCA 5.
Yeah, explain to that
Amendment
because
5.
I think that
SDA 5 was basically an enormous overreach by the Democrats in the Senate, and it was essentially an attempt, you know, the favorite word of the Democrats is fair, right? It was essentially an attempt to balance out the minority population at the UC and to a slightly lesser extent Cal State University. So the UCs that were targeted the most were really UC Berkeley and UCLA. Those were, of course, the two universities that had the largest Asian American population.
Right, right.
So essentially, SCA 5.
So that was the conflict.
What SCA 5 would have done is it would have balanced out the amount of acceptances that those universities could take that were from any particular demographic, consistent with the percentage of population in California that they happen to hold.
Right.
So, for example, you know, California is a large Latino state. Okay, at the time, Latinos were very low when it came to percentage of acceptances at the UCs and the Cal State schools, whereas the Asian Americans were extremely high. So essentially what this would have done is it would have, and I hold up the air quotes, balanced out the acceptance rate, because, you know, let's face it, the you know, the Asian Americans, they come to America primarily for two reasons.
Yeah.
For employment opportunity and for educational opportunity.
Right.
They take it very, very seriously. So, you know, Peter being in a district that just happened to be one of the largest, we never really figured it out at the national level, but this is California, the largest Asian American district in California, we capitalized on it. Peter recognized his constituency right away. He understood that this was important to them. And it wasn't just about this bill. It was about equal opportunity. It was about not being discriminated against because of success, something that the Asian Americans, you know, obviously are very, very focused on. It was about not – they felt like they were being discriminated against because they came to this country, worked hard, and achieved.
Yeah.
And they felt, and the bottom line was Peter recognized the makeup of his district, and he capitalized on it.
Well, when I was watching this – go down and covering that race, I thought to myself, this is genius. This is the so not debating SCA 5 merits, but just politically, I was like, this is genius. This is the perfect wedge issue, because Asian American voters, especially immigrant, Latino.
He was a legal immigrant who registered as a Republican the day he became an American citizen, by the way.
Yeah. So, but they're legal. They're inherently conservative, small c, right there. And I thought, this is a perfect wedge issue. You're hitting them, you know, and don't mess with people's kids, man, because you're right, that's
education.
Why they came to America, it's to better life. You go to school, work
the
hard.
The Democrats essentially gave away an issue that, publicly speaking, they typically tend to poll well on, and that is education.
Well, I thought that this was the I was sitting there thinking, this is the seeds to the future of the Republican Party in California coming back. Now, 5 years later, I didn't see any change. How come that opportunity just kind of frittered away?
Well, I mean, you've gone from 2014 to the era of Trump. So obviously, it's a very different dynamic. But let me say this: in 2014, the energy behind Peter's race became crucial to helping Catherine Baker get elected in AD 16. An absolutely fantastic woman. Not a hardcore conservative like I am, but an outstanding woman. We should talk about her another time. And it also energized a lot of the Asian American grassroots in Orange County. Ling Ling Chang got elected. Young Kim got elected.
I forgot, although
Janet
Catherine
Nguyen
Baker
got elected.
So our bipartisanship segment.
Yeah.
See, this is how you do it, everybody. Catherine Baker, I do agree. She's top notch. As a legislator,
but this goes right back to what
that's how we do. You can continue.
It goes right back to what you asked earlier. And you asked, why is it that we can get along? Why can we get along? Because I think there's more Catherine Bakers in this world than there are people that are so far to the left and so far to the right. I think at the end of the day, people are comfortable having honest debate and accepting that not everybody's going to agree with them. Stephen, you and I are not sitting in any cloakroom. We're not debating legislation in Sacramento or in Washington, D.C., okay? We don't have to fight as hard as we possibly can to please our constituencies. We can have discussion. Let me ask you, why is it that Democrats and Republicans, more often than not, in Sacramento, can get together and have dinner and get drinks and things along those lines.
Right, right.
But people like you and me, and more often than not, can't.
So it's so because we know the game too is part of it. So everything. Good luck. Not if Ted Cruz runs again and you help him out. No, not good luck on that. But good luck on everything.
Thank
you. He's a weird guy, man. I know there's another time you could say he's not weird, but he's a weird guy, man.
Let me tell you something. We can do it, you know. And again, we can do it another day. But three of the best things that I've done in my life politically is get to know Peter Kuo and work with him. Worked for Chuck DeVore when he ran for U.S. Senate. One of the smartest men I ever knew. And just, and as smart as he is, he's also one of the best people to hang around with. Such a great guy. And working for that Cruz campaign.
Cruz country.
It was an amazing campaign to work for. And frankly, he would have been the nominee had it not been for the biggest disruptor in the history of politics.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And Jason Scalise, Republican consultant. If you're a Republican, you need a consultant. He's your guy. I'm Steve Tavares. Don't forget to go to East Bay Citizen and ebcitizen.com. 10-year anniversary this week. We've got a lot of stuff planned for the rest of the year. We're going to look back at some of the biggest stories and what happened, like Mary Hayashi we talked about earlier. What happened to her? I'll tell you what. It was a spoiler alert. If she didn't go to that Neiman Marcus, she'd be right now in the state Senate, and we'd be talking about her definitely running for Congress for Eric Swalwell's seat. So see how things change. That was like 8 years ago. So we'll be looking at things like that, some of the big stories, reliving, refocusing for the future. But 10 years ago, in the meantime, this is Steve Tavares, and I'm angry. You should be too.